And our special guest tonight, Mike Barra. And guess what? We'll take your phone calls with him as we talk about ancient aliens on the moon right here on Coast to Coast AM. Mike Barra, the Earth is so close in proximity to the moon, yet many people, yourself included, believe the moon might have been used as a base. Why not use just good old planet Earth? Or maybe they didn't want us to know they were there. What do you think it is?
Well, I'm sure they did that. I'm sure that there are places, and you know, certainly that's what the whole ancient aliens milieu is about, is the evidence that there was bases right here. I think I saw something the other day that some people are claiming on Google Earth that they found some what looked like spaceports, landing ports, ancient Egyptian landing ports, which looked really pretty cool. I haven't had a chance to really go over that yet. So certainly they could have done that. There might have been very valid reasons for being on the moon. There might have been periods of time where the Earth was inhospitable. I mean, certainly if we did experience, let's say, some catastrophic meteor strikes in the distant past, the Earth might have been a very unpleasant place for a while. So it really depends on, there's all kinds of reasons why you could have wanted to be on the moon. And it may simply be that there were you know, mining to be done there, that there was minerals and things that were needed or desired.
Well, maybe so. But you believe, as I do, we've been to the moon, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that some of these theories that we haven't, they seem to be getting, to my mind, crazier and crazier and less likely. And I guess what I keep coming back to is if, you know, I think it was Charlie Duke who put it this way in a great film called In the Shadow of the Moon. He said, you know, if we were going to fake it, why would we fake it 9 times? We went to the moon 9 times.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. Mike, let's take some calls here. This hour's going to fly by. Let's go to Maurice in Las Vegas, west of the Rockies, first of all. Hey, Maurice, go ahead.
Yes, I used to work at Jet Propulsion Laboratories. I actually met Richard C. We just passed in the hall, that's all. But
two ships in the night.
That's it. I was also in a monastery for a while, and while I was there, we heard about towers on the dark side of the moon, quite tall, like miles tall. Have you heard of anything of that?
Yeah, well, first of all, just to clarify, there's no dark side of the moon. There is a far side of the moon. The dark,
well,
at some point, the entire lunar surface is illuminated during the month. But yeah, I have, and in fact, in the book, In Ancient Aliens on the Moon, I show you some pictures of some of these things, and there's one Zond 3 image. It's a Russian probe image, again, of this thing that looks like an Egyptian obelisk or the Washington Monument. It's just this gigantic tower that at the scale of the photograph has to be 20, 30, 40 miles high. So we do have images of this stuff, and that's what some of the glass structures are, is they're actually support beams and support structures for these larger scaffolding kind of structures. And if the scaffolding itself had collapsed, then the beams that stick straight up would be the ones that would be left. There's not only the tower that Richard Hoagland found in the Sinus Medii region, but there's an excellent picture that I go into pretty extensively of another glass spire that's sticking up from the surface of Mare Crisium, and it even has support wires and structures kind of going into it. So there's lots of pictures of that kind of thing available and that are in the book.
All right, Michael, let's go next to Cody driving in Indianapolis, first-time caller. Cody, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It's a pleasure.
Sure thing.
So, I was just curious. This is all I'm new at listening Coast to Coast.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. But I was just curious, do you think the moon could be the 12th planet Sitchin was talking about?
Interesting question. No, because I think the moon is included in the ancient Sumerian account of 12 planets. I think it's one of the bodies that's actually included. And, you know, the 12th planet does appear to be a foreign body, Nibiru. But, of course, there's a theory that Nibiru is actually a brown dwarf, and that the planet that these Anunnaki actually live on or lived on was actually a small moon that orbited this gigantic brown dwarf, and that they would be close enough that they would actually be able to get enough heat to survive and retain an atmosphere and all that stuff. So I guess to answer the question directly, no, I don't think it is the 12th planet, and it is included in the list of celestial bodies, I think, that the Sumerians counted. But it is a fascinating place. There are those who think it is completely artificial, and they may end up being ultimately right. And I'll just tell you this. There are some things that I know about the moon and that that Richard Hoagland knows about the moon that he's never told anybody. And there's things that he knows about Mars that he's never told anybody. And hopefully in the next few weeks in some of these presentations, we'll be telling some people, telling you some of those things.
With all the things that you've done, Mike, you know, the many things, the many years you've been doing this, are you at a point right now where you think we're getting close to some kind of major answers, major announcements?
No, never.
I keep telling Steve Bassett that too.
Yeah, Steve, God love him. We got to have him around to talk about this. But no, I don't believe in any kind of disclosure. I think we talked about this before. If they disclose this stuff officially, I'm heading for the hills. I mean, I'm on the first plane to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and hope that the catastrophe doesn't wash me away because that's the end of the line. I mean, I cannot see why anybody at the top of the power pyramid, at the top of the hierarchy, would voluntarily give up that position if they don't have to, and that's the only way it's going to come out. That's what has to happen. If there is an apocalypse, if there's a revelation or a disclosure, then the people at the top are only going to lose from that. They're only going to have less power and less influence and less wealth than they have now. And, you know, George, that's what the whole Brookings report is about. It basically says people will go nuts. And, you know, I see no evidence at this point to convince me that that's not true. I do think people would go a little bit wacky. I mean, you look at what's going on in the Arab world right now, and it's pretty bad all over the place. So why would they basically shoot themselves in the foot by disclosing making some sort of official announcement? And the other thing too is, hey, why do we need that? Why do we even need that? I mean, we have truth right in front of us. The truth is in front of us all the time. Why do we have to depend on the judgments or the authentication of these authority figures? You know, we don't need the church or the government or the president of the corporation of the United States of America to tell us that something's real when we can look at it and know that it's real just from our own studies and our own visual inspection. So, you know, again, to me, that's just like, it's almost like sort of being a dog and just hoping your master pats you on the head and says, oh, good boy, you were right all along. I mean, I don't care about that, and I don't think that is ever going to come to pass anyway.
What do some of the skeptics say about your thoughts and theories, Mike?
Well, you know, they have a lot of criticisms. George, I take issue with the word skeptic. I'm a skeptic. You know, I think you're skeptical. You don't believe everything that comes on your show.
I want to investigate.
Yeah. And you know, to me, a skeptic is someone who withholds judgment or is not willing to just sort of, you know, accept everything that they're told. These people are debunkers, and they have an agenda. And if they're on the NASA payroll, which many of them are in terms of their research grants, they have no credibility. So, you know, I mean, they say all kinds of things about me. People have created fake Facebook profiles and come in.
Welcome to the club, Michael.
Yeah, and attacked me and attacked my brother, attacked other members of my family, told me they were going to kill my cats if I didn't shut up, things like that. And it just, you know, I don't know. I don't, at this point, it's one of these things where I really don't want to get into it with them, but every so often I feel compelled to respond. And you know how it is, George. Whatever you answer, they'll just come up with 10 more things tomorrow for you to answer. And they take statements completely. I don't want to say out of context because that's a politician's excuse. But let me give you an example, just real quick, while we got
a minute. All right, sure thing.
There's a thing going around to the effect that I said something on an Ancient Aliens TV show on the NASA Connection episode that is in conflict with what we wrote in Dark Mission and what I've written in Ancient Aliens on the Moon. And it has to do with the whole 19.5 degree stars above the landing site rituals and stuff that Buzz Aldrin performed in the lunar module. And what in fact happened was is that they're interviewing me, and you know this, they interview you, and they took something that I said about Apollo 11, and then they spliced it together with something I said about Apollo 16, and put it together as if I was saying that this thing, that alignment that had happened on Apollo 16 had actually happened on Apollo 11. Now, you know and I know, I have no control over how they edit what I say. I have no desire to control how they edit what I say. And there's even a clear, completely obvious cut in the audio where you can clearly see that they spliced, pause, and then Mike talks about something else.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I'm responsible for the fact that what I was, you know, made to have said on the show is not what I've previously published in other books. But again, you know, I don't have a problem with the people at Ancient Aliens. I think they do a great job putting together great shows with good information.
I met with the executive producer a few weeks ago, and they're all excited about doing year five.
Yeah, and, you know, and I mean, it was just the way it was cut, and either they misunderstood what I explained to them, or they just thought that this sounded like a really cool soundbite. So, you know, again, I have no control over that, but it's kind of like, you know, are you still beating your wife? Well, again, I'm not going to sit there and waste my energy defending myself over something I never actually said.
Let's go to Keystone Heights, Florida. Bob's with us east of the Rockies. Hey, Bob, thanks.
Hey, Mr. Barra.
Yeah.
I have no problem with the notion that an advanced alien civilization may have come through the solar system at some point in the past. And even Michio Kaku said to Art Bell years ago, he said, look, or maybe you, George, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
He said, look, he says, if this has happened, then the best place to look for alien artifacts is on the moon. So I have no problem with that. However, I do have a problem with the Ziggurat and the other evidence. I've read Dark Mission. I've read Monuments of Mars. I have one of Richard's videos. I have problems with the evidence, and I, with all due respect, consider it utter rubbish. The problem with your analysis is you're not incorporating the latest imagery, ultra-high-resolution submeter images from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter that NASA now has orbiting the moon, wide-angle and narrow-angle images. If these artifacts are real, and it would be wonderful if they were because we'd get all kinds of funding for space programs, you're not looking at that data. You're looking at lunar orbiter images from the 60s, like lunar orbiter image, lunar orbiter 7, 5 is the one that the Ziggurat image came from, I believe, or it could have been Apollo, I'm not sure. A couple months ago, I looked at that image. I, for the life of me, cannot find what you say is in that image. It looks Photoshopped. I'm not an expert on that. You need to look at the latest high-resolution submeter images of the lunar surface, of which I think more than half the lunar surface has now been imaged in submeter resolution. You don't also have complete coverage by the wide-angle cameras. If your evidence is real, Mr. Barra, it should be in that data. And if it's been fabricated or doctored by NASA, then you should be able to pull out crops of screen captures of those areas, and you can compare and analyze that. I've not seen Richard talk about that, and I like Richard. I enjoy when he's on the show. I'm just trying to be honest with you. You need to look at the latest data, not decades-old lunar orbiter or Apollo data.
And Bob, but yeah, I got to tell you, and I want Mike to react to this. You seem like you know your thing. Do you work in the business?
I've been an amateur astronomer for 47 years. I exclusively observe the moon. I'm a member of the Association of Lunar and Planetary Observers, the British Astronomical Association, and the chair of the Lunar Observing Group of the Alachua Astronomy Club. I have a forthcoming paper on transient lunar phenomena that's been accepted by a British journal. So I have no problem with anomalies on the moon. I have a problem with the evidence that's been presented so far in everything I've looked at, and I've looked at this for years. I'm unconvinced, and where is it in the data we're getting now?
All right, Michael, I'll let you react to this, and of course he thinks you need to look at other imaging, but go ahead.
Well, first of all, I didn't hear the whole tirade. I got cut off part of the way through, but it sounded like this sort of standard, you know, seminar calling stuff that there's a reason why I do look at LROC imaging. I do look at that. I've looked at it very recently. Most of it does not even cover the areas in question in any sort of decent resolution most of the time. In a lot of cases, the imagery is at very, very high straight-up sun angles, which makes it really impossible to get any sort of lights and shadow effects. And you need shading, you need shadows to be able to determine shape from shading. For instance, you can look at Copernicus, and there's a very, very interesting oblique image of the crater Copernicus. The frame number escapes me, but it's in the book. It's in Ancient Aliens on the Moon. And it clearly shows all kinds of artificial structures on the rim of the crater Copernicus, including the power plant or the rebel base on Hoth that we talked about earlier, which is unmistakable, indisputable, artificial. Anybody with eyes can see that it's artificial. And that is taken at a very oblique angle. Now, if you look at imagery of that area from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, not only is that specific area not really covered, but under the lighting conditions, it looks, the whole surface of the area looks completely flat and completely smooth. Now, my conclusion is, from that information, is that there's only really two answers. Either without the sun coming in at a bit of an angle, you're not able to see all of the very complex terrain that's there, or it's been whitewashed by NASA. And the truth is that in my experience, NASA has whitewashed information. We probably caught them at it 15 to 18 times. So the reality is, no, I don't trust anything that's purely digital. I don't trust any of that stuff that comes out of there. The only time anything seems to slip through in the digital imagery is when they simply do not understand or do not catch that the image exists in the first place. This Daedalus Ziggurat image, for instance, there's a whole bunch of photographs that were taken of it, of the area, including the main frame, 5564. Now, there were two different cameras with two different film magazines that took a bunch of pictures, some in color and some in black and white. And they were all on one photographic image map that was all marked out. So if anybody decided, you know, there's this pyramid thing on this picture, we should probably erase that before we put it up on the web, they would be able to go to this map and see all of the other pictures that showed the exact same thing or showed the area. And every single one of those pictures, the thing doesn't exist. It looks completely gone. It's completely whitewashed. Flat, there's nothing there, right? But there were two other images that were taken at the same time on the same mission on Apollo 11 by one of the astronauts with a third camera, but they were on a different photographic map. Therefore, if you were kind of being sloppy, you wouldn't know that these other images even existed, and both of them show the ziggurat exactly as it is depicted in the controversial picture, the one that we got off the web, the one that I believe is genuine for a whole bunch of other reasons. Now, I'll tell you something else.
The right, 30 seconds, Mike.
The imagery that I do trust is the first-generation print imagery that I can get from people like Ken Johnston, Jr., and I do look at all the old imagery because that stuff, a lot more stuff has slipped through the cracks from the older stuff than from the newer stuff. The LROC stuff, I mean, again, I'm interested in the area of the crater Tycho, and the bottom line is that the Reconnaissance Orbiter image is supposed to be much, much better than the Clementine data that I've been working on from Tycho, but it looks exactly the same. They've de-resed it. So, again, my experience with NASA is they're not honest. I don't trust the new data. I work with the old stuff because that's where I see what I think is the real ground truth.
We're coming back for final phone calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Hugh Simpson joins us, former CBS television reporter. His work 2012 and beyond, preparing for the perfect fiscal and physical storm. Make sure you're part of that exciting Coast to Coast show. And when we roll right back in just a moment, your final questions with Mike Barra on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Mike Barra with us here on Coast to Coast. And of course, your final questions indeed. Mike, what is after Ancient Aliens? I'm sure you're always working.
Well, yeah, I am. We've got Ancient Aliens on the Moon, of course, is out now. And, for 2013, there's going to be an Ancient Aliens on Mars. So we're going to move on from Ancient Aliens on the Moon to Ancient Aliens on Mars next year. And I do have some other things that I cannot talk about that are really exciting for 2013. Let me put it this way. I am I'm working really hard to drop that that extra 10 pounds the camera puts on you.
Good for you. Keep at it. It's not too hard. Just stay off. Well, you'll know what to do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you the George diet.
Well, yeah. But, you know my habits, George. You know what I have to avoid, right?
That's right. Let's go to Dan in DeWitt, Iowa, on the wild card line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks, George. Good morning.
Sure
thanks
thing.
For taking my call.
You're,
and,
you're welcome.
Mike, I want to assure you my name really is Dan. I'm not Stan or Stuart. The question I have for you is, I can buy extraterrestrials on Mars, on the Moon, I can buy the Anunnaki coming here and genetically engineering us as a civilization. I can even buy ancient civilizations living on the planet Earth. What I've never been able to figure out is, with all the resources that we have on this planet, why do we only find stone structures, stone ruins? I would think that they would have wanted to be as comfortable as we are and used the stone structures and built skyscrapers, and yet we don't find any of that.
Well, remember that on Earth, you know, Earth is an extremely erosive environment.
Oh, it sure is.
Mars is not. You know, Mars is like a giant refrigerator. So really, you know, if you had skyscrapers on Mars, they would be able to be preserved significantly longer. And on the moon, as long as they were protected from meteors by, 20-mile-high glass scaffolding, multi-layered structures, it could last even longer than that. So, you know, Earth is just a very erosive environment. I think, and I'm not sure of the exact dating, but I do believe that it's been calculated that if everything were to stop right now, that within 10,000 years, you would not even be able to tell that New York City ever existed. In other words, it would just be nothing but...
Maybe even less.
Yeah, it would be just a pile. I can't remember if it's 1,000 years or 10,000 years.
Dust.
It would just be a pile of dust and different various metals and so forth. You'd find a lot of, you know, iron and steel and everything would be broken down to the base elements. And you'd never even know there was a city there. And interestingly, you know, as Sitchin, again, we're back to Zechariah Sitchin, as he pointed out, there are several locations in southern Africa where he said that the Anunnaki stories talked about there being major ports and cities where they have found these exact sort of widespread mixtures of the kinds of materials that would have made up a city had there once been a city there.
It is amazing at what could happen over just a period of years. I think it was Discovery Channel that did that.
Yeah, the Earth without... Yeah. Without people or something like
just
that.
Nothing. Which, just nothing.
Yeah, and I mean, who wants an Earth without people? I mean, that's what it's here for, right?
Very lonely.
Yeah.
Pueblo, Colorado, it's Mark's turn. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
All right. First of all, thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. But I just want to let you know that Life After People show, that was on the History Channel.
Okay.
But anyway, what I was going to say is, first of all, I'm a big Robert Anton Wilson, the writer, big fan of his, so I like to consider myself militant agnostic. I don't say I believe in anything. I'm trying to keep my mind open. But as far as, like, moon landings and whatnot, I was actually just having a conversation with my buddy about my disbelief in people's ideas that the moon landings were hoaxed, and I know that's not your position at all, but if they were to have been hoaxed, and I kind of think that this might be a possibility, that it would not be because we couldn't get to the moon, but because we possess technology even beyond that. And in fact, I kind of theorize that a lot of the UFOs that people see are our technology. I think the human race is a lot more capable than what a lot of people give us credit for. And that's actually one of my beefs with ancient aliens, is kind of shortchanging humans, that even in ancient times, we were probably way more advanced than we are now. Not that aliens weren't around, but even possibly these structures that may or may not be on the moon might be from much older human civilizations. And just kind of thought what your ideas or what your thoughts are about our own past, completely independent from ancient aliens.
That's a possibility, Mike.
Yeah, it is, and we discussed that earlier, you know, we talked about the Hopi legends that essentially say exactly what you're saying, which is that, you know, there have been previous versions of man, previous very advanced civilizations, and that they had technology well beyond what we have today, and that they may have built a lot of this stuff, and then it was abandoned. And, you know, again, people ask a lot of times, George, about why cover this up? Why would NASA want to cover stuff up? And the reason is that, you know, if you come out and you say, hey, by the way, we've discovered artifacts of a very, very super advanced civilization that once existed on the moon, the first question you're going to get at that press conference is, well, what happened to them? And if the answer is, well, they were wiped out in some sort of solar system-wide cataclysm that destroyed a planet that Mars was once a moon of and wiped out the dinosaurs on the Earth and caused all kinds of other problems, you're going to set off a general panic. Or if you say something even crazier, like, well, we think there was a war between, you know, humans and their own machines or something, it's going to get even worse. So the thing is that that idea is very seductive, and it's very smart, and it's very probable that, that this really isn't ancient aliens in the true sense. It's alien to this current civilization, but that it's somehow related to us. In a very, very far distant past. That makes complete sense to me, and I support the caller's idea. I think that's pretty much the conclusion I've come to, is that these things really aren't necessarily so much the standard sort of gray aliens, but they're really our ancestors or our brothers or sisters or cousins.
Let's go to Stuart in Boulder, Colorado. I don't think he's the one you've been talking about, though. Hey, Stuart, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi, Stu.
I'm the guy that Mike was talking
about. Oh, you are?
Oh,
I was going to get you on to do your own rebuttal, but if you want a quick question or two, go ahead.
I'm up now, and you can call me later.
All right, we're going to get your number. Do you have a quick question for Mike before you go?
I did. My main question for Mike was, I wanted to know what it would take to falsify his belief in the ziggurat.
I would have to see a first-generation print from somebody who had held it since the very early days of Apollo, somebody like Ken Johnston. I would have to have that. I would have to verify its authenticity, scan it, and there would have to be virtually nothing there. But that's not even going to happen, because I already have two other images, 6613 and 6614, which confirm most of what is seen in the ziggurat image that we've put out before. So that's what it would take. I would have to see something that was truly authentic. And, you know, what I'd like to find out from you is what it would take to falsify your belief that this is a fake. And, I mean, you laid out three very specific criteria, all of which I completely destroyed in my analysis on my blog. And people can go to my blog and read on it and read it and decide for themselves. But you set out three standards of proof, all of which I believe very clearly I met. So what would it take for you to admit that this thing is probably a legitimate image?
Well, so actually I did respond to your blog post on my own blog, but obviously we can't really play blog tag.
blog.
Left. I disagree with what you said. I don't think that you, as you put it, destroyed my arguments, and people can go to my blog and see why I say that. But basically, I mean, for example, I really don't like to use this word, but I'll use it anyway. I believe or trust other images from other spacecraft. I mean, the one with the ziggurat for you comes from I think it's the Call of Duty Zombies forum. That's really one of the only sources that you have for this, whereas there are so many other images taken by other craft, including non-NASA ones, that have imaged the site at very high resolution, as a caller about 20 minutes ago said, and yet you just dismiss those pretty much because you say it doesn't have the ziggurat, therefore it's fake. And so I'm curious, actually, you said that you would like to verify an original print's authenticity. How would you go about doing that? I mean, what would make it to you say that something is authentic, as opposed to, say, the Selene images from the Japanese spacecraft that imaged that region at 10 meter per pixel resolution?
Well, first of all, the Selene image is full of artifacts, and you can see that from what I produce, and those artifacts were deliberately induced by the Japanese. Secondly, as I've told you before, I have many, many occasions, maybe a dozen, 15, 18, 20, 25 at this point, where NASA has been deceptive or has overtly lied or altered imagery before. So, again, I don't trust their source information. What makes it authentic for me is the fact that I know that it's been outside of NASA's control for decades. And this was back in the days when people were able to slip things out the door before they started putting the clamps on this. So again, that's, you know, I would trust what I got from Ken Johnson's information, Ken Johnson's collection, more than I would trust anything posted on any website by NASA, simply because of my life experience of spending the last 15 years dealing with their politics and their BS and their false claims about the face on Mars and their false claims about the DNM pyramid on Mars and all the other things that have come out. The false claims they made about the MOLA instrument, the Mars Orbiter Laser Altimeter. They've made all kinds of false
claims. You two would be a good debate there, Michael.
Well, you know, again, George, if you want to debate, I really have one question for Stuart.
Stuart is now giving his number to Tom.
So. Well, what I'd like to know.
Let's save it in case I have him on.
Well, okay, what I'd like to know at this point is, are you the guy that, under the fake email name, sent me those email messages to my Gmail account?
And I'll let you ask him that if he ever comes back on, all right?
I lost him. Okay. Well, so, again, you know, I first of all applaud him for having the guts to come on. I have a feeling that deep down somewhere there's a nice guy.
Well,
but
is he the guy? That's the other part.
Well, you know, again, if you're going to stoop to that level, that's pretty ridiculous. And the truth is, look, these guys are debunkers. They have an agenda, and the agenda is to make sure that people are like me and like you.
Oh,
and
yeah,
like
but keep in mind,
are not taken seriously.
They all, even those who are opposed to what we all do, they have a right to say that. That's what this country is all about, and that doesn't bother me. I mean, I'll go toe to toe with all of them. You should too.
Well, I will, except that what the real desire is on the part of people like James Oberg and Phil Plait, and now I guess we can throw Stuart in there. Congratulations, Stuart. You've now made it up to their level. Their objective is to get you to spend all of your energy defending yourself against attack after attack after attack, rather than looking for new information, rather than putting new stuff out. So, again, I only respond occasionally. And I only respond, George, in this case, I responded to him because of his very strong implication that either Richard or I had fabricated this image. He said he wouldn't put it past us that we had done this. Well, you know, I'd like to hear from him at some point whether he's now prepared to put it past us for doing something like that, because the truth is we don't have to. And I would encourage everybody to go to the image including the guy from Colorado or the other guy that called in, Bob or whatever his name was, go look at that image. Go look at AS11, 38, 55, 64. And you don't have to believe in the ziggurat at all. Look at the rest of that picture. There's artificial buildings, structures, mechanisms, vehicles all over that image. And they are completely obvious to anybody who's ever even put together a model car or a model flying saucer.
Well, the greatest part of this show, Michael, is everybody has a right to make up their own minds. And that's what's so good. Let's take a few more calls, and we're out of time. Tony in Shiloh, Illinois. Hey, Tony, go ahead.
Thanks a lot, George. I just wanted to make a comment real quick about Ancient Aliens. I love it. But I have to say UFO Hunters was the best show. They really went out of their way, as opposed to the current show that is on called Chasing UFOs, which is absolutely the opposite. And it kind of reminds me of, you know.
Yeah, UFO Hunters was more of a newsy type approach. I like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Bill Burns and group did a great job.
And
Bill's got a new book
coming. Homework, you know, and it was
Of course, yeah.
I wanted to ask Mike where that of the smokestack that was a while back, probably in early 2002 or something, and the supposed space vehicle location of the moon. And if not, are you aware of the Apollo photographs of the cigar-shaped or submarine-shaped object?
Yeah, I've seen that picture, you know, repeatedly, and I don't know what it is, to be quite honest with you. It looks like to me like it could actually be something in front of the camera, very close to the camera. But here's the thing. I've never seen a frame number associated with it. And while some people out in the audience may not believe that I have any standards, the truth is, unless it comes with an actual Apollo image number that I can go and do some investigation and look at, I just can't place any validity on it. I mean, that cigar-shaped thing, I have seen it many times. It looks to me like it's a lunar orbiter photo, but I don't know for sure. But it certainly is interesting, and I certainly encourage everybody to keep digging. But I really need, you know, an image number, a photograph number to go look it up and start doing some work on it.
All right, let's get another quick call in. First-time caller, Daryl in Kent, Ohio. Daryl, go ahead.
Hi, guys. God bless Art Bell and long live Coast to Coast. 50 years ago, I built a telescope, and I've been skeptical ever since. They send a Hubble telescope up, and all you got to do is look through the thing to know if it works. I mean, you know, how insane is that? Anyway, my question was after rovers. I see these rovers. They look like they were made by the guys who developed Transformers. Why couldn't they make helium Zeppelins that would never get stuck, that could go up 20 miles? That was one of the ideas I had.
How do you do that, Mike? We only have 30 seconds left.
I don't know. I'm not Edison. I'm not great at inventing stuff like that. You mean for Mars?
Probably.
You've got a really good camera up there, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, assuming you can trust what you get back. And you've got the rovers on the ground, so we're kind of covering things from both both above and below. And the next step is to have, they've talked about little glider planes and things like that to fly around with cameras, and I think that would be really cool.
Name of the book, Ancient Aliens by Mike Barra. His website, of course, and blog all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Mike, as usual, thanks again.
And thank you, George, for having me.
You take care of yourself, and we shall be back with another edition of Coast to Coast tomorrow. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lautasore, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.